New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns, and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
We're so glad you're along with us on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We'd love for you to connect with us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. You can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. Well, right now, we're going to transition. We're going to keep talking some more baseball. We're so delighted to have live with us in studio our producer at YSR, and that is Andy Pondillo. Hello, Andy. It's good to have you with us tonight.
I'm excited to be here, excited for some All-Star festivities. It'll be nice for some of these veteran teams to get a bit of a break here.
Well, I know how much you love the sport of baseball. Is this perhaps one of your favorite times of the year with, as you're talking about, all those All-Star festivities?
I think it's bigger for kids. I think it was huge for me as a kid growing up. I always look for the All-Star game to see all the different jerseys out there, the home run derby. It's a lot of fun. I think at this day and age, it doesn't quite do the same thing for me. I'd rather see October baseball, opening day, holiday baseball, those kinds of things. But I still enjoy the All-Star game. It's always good to see something a little different, just a bit of a change of pace.
Well, one of my favorite things about the All-Star weekend, and of course coming up on Monday night, is the Home Run Derby. I have to ask you, I want to pick your brain, Andy Pondillo. Who is your favorite to win this year?
My favorite is easily Giancarlo Stanton, the monster for the Miami Marlins, I should say. Uh-huh. The monster. He's just a raw talent. You don't see these types of athletes in baseball very often. A huge guy. He hits some of the most mammoth home runs you're going to see. A guy that I think will go over 500 feet multiple times at the Home Run Derby. Takes one of the most incredible batting practices I've ever seen back when he was in the National League playing in Houston. So I hope for Giancarlo to put on a show. I would say a dark horse, Troy Tulowitzki, having a big year. Sometimes when you have those magical years, a Home Run Derby championship may be another thing he can add to his mantle for a possible MVP season.
Okay, so you rattle off a couple of names. Who else should we perhaps keep our eye on?
I would say maybe you could see Jose Bautista putting together another nice run at the Home Run Derby. We've seen him have some good years out there. We've seen him, you know, hit the big home runs in regular season. I don't think he's the type of guy that takes as an impressive batting practice as a Giancarlo Stanton, but his veteran ability that he's done a couple of these things now. He knows what it takes. He knows how to condense his energy, maybe not burn himself out in the first round. I look for him to be the type of guy that could go through all the rounds and win it as well.
Okay, so we are past the midpoint of the Major League Baseball season, and Andy Pondillo is joining us right here at YSR. He is our baseball guy, our baseball guru, and let's start talking about the Astros. A number of different storylines that I want to hit on, but the fact that 21-year-old Domingo Santana, he was called up, he got teased a little bit, and then he was sent right back down to the minors. Why did that experiment with him and him being demoted so quickly, why did that not work out?
That might have been one of the quickest demotions I think I've ever seen the Astros, or any team for that matter, do. 21-year-old Domingo Santana, very young to be called up to the major leagues first off. So I don't know if the Astros completely thought he was ready to be at the major league level, but the other option was Robbie Grossman, who's been at the major league level for a lot of this year, was batting around the 150 marker, so he was just not the right guy at that point in time. Dexter Fowler on the DL, so they need another outfielder. Domingo, a huge prospect for the Astros, and some might even say could be George Springer level, or even, dare you say, better. So Domingo comes with a lot of praise from the minor league system. He comes up, struck out 11 out of 13 times up the plate, didn't look good in any of the at-bats, really, just looked kind of lost. I would have liked to have seen him get more of a chance in Houston. I think that sometimes when you bring a guy that young up, there's going to be a month or two of struggles, and I think that's good for them because right now the Astros aren't competing for a World Series, not competing for a division title. They're competing to try and get closer to 500 to prove that they are a worthy team, that they're worthy of signing free agents in the offseason and attract other veteran players. So his struggles, while it may have hurt the team right now, I think it could have benefited the team later to get that out of his system. George Springer went through the same thing when he was first called up. Domingo maybe was at another level because he was striking out nearly every at-bat. That's kind of an epidemic with the Astros right now. So I thought it was a bit premature for me. However, I can also see why they made the move, because he just looked lost out there. And for a 21-year-old kid, he's going to get his hacks at the major league level very soon.
So from a player's perspective, how much does that affect your confidence?
I don't know. It's different. It depends how you handle it. I've seen players go down to the minor leagues, go back for a month, come back up, and, you know, they're a completely different guy. Like, they got the message. They figured out what they need to do. And I'm sure that Bo Pulitzer had a nice long talk with him before he was sent down and let him know exactly what he needs to work on down in the minors. Because a lot of times when you look at minor league statistics, you see a guy batting 340 at AAA. That doesn't always translate to the major leagues because he might get away with a mechanical issue. He may not have to guess pitch as much. He may be able to just see and react. Whereas when you get to the major leagues, you're going to have to be able to sit on a certain pitch, be able to foul ball off on the outer half, keep yourself alive, be able to take that one good fastball you get per at bat and do something with it. Well, as minor leagues, you just get away with a lot more. So there might have been something mechanically he needs to fix. I'm sure he knows exactly what he needs to do. As for confidence, that's something that, you know, probably won't ever really come out until maybe later, because you don't really go to reporters and say, I lost all my confidence because I'm being sent down. You know, the right thing to say is, you know, I'm going to go down here, I'm going to work on things, I'm going to get back up. It's hard to tell what goes through a player's head. I think each player is an individual case.
Well, and but what I have read about him, he seems like he's a resilient guy.
He did everything you wanted him to do as he matured, you know, and be traded at such a young age. And he was traded right around his 18th birthday to the Astros. So to go through that as a young guy, to switch organizations and come up the way he did, he's come up through the organization very fast, playing Major League Baseball at 21, or really doing anything at the professional level at 21, I could imagine, is very difficult.
It is our Major League Baseball Breakdown this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, being joined in studio live with our producer, Andy Pondillo, as we continue our discussion and getting some perspective on the Houston Astros. So the strikeouts for the team lead the MLB, and they just keep piling up. Andy, how do you adjust?
I don't know. I just think it's a personnel problem. I believe you've assembled a team with a lot of similar hitters. I believe the best offenses in Major League Baseball are the teams that can diversify their offense. That's what the Red Sox did so well last year. It wasn't because Big Poppy and Mike Napoli were hitting home runs that the Red Sox were good last year. It's because they had Jacoby Ellsbury, Dustin Pedroia doing so well at the top of the order. They had different types of hitters that can do different things. They have the types of hitters that move runners, are able to win games when it's 3-2, 4-3. Three low-scoring games. A good offense is not always about the runs scored. I think a lot of us get caught up in the runs scored category way too much. A good offense is an offense that can take an ace pitcher and scratch together three runs off him versus, you know, a day where they just slaughter someone for 16 runs. Yes, it's nice, and that's what the Astros have done at times, where they've hit a lot of home runs, very home run dependent team. They've put up run numbers that we haven't quite seen out of them in a long time, but there are times when they get against a really good pitcher and they just can't scratch together one or two runs because strikeouts do not move runners. I don't see it as a thing that they necessarily can completely fix. I think John Singleton, George Springer, very young prospects, guys that probably can lower those strikeout numbers to an extent, but they also walk so much it kind of offsets it. But other guys in the lineup, maybe a Matt Dominguez, a Chris Carter, Jason Castro, I fear that's just who they are.
Okay, Andy Pondillo is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break. We'll be rejoined and talking much, much more about the Houston Astros. Okay, we are cruising through the fastest 2 hours in radio at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, and we are so glad that you are joining us on this Friday night. I want to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports, and one of my favorite guys on the planet, Andy Pondillo, is with us tonight. Of course, he's our producer of our program, and he is breaking it all down. We've been talking about the Houston Astros before we went to commercial break, but Andy, I'd like to pause and extend an invitation to share with all the listeners across the country where they can go and listen to that fabulous podcast of yours.
Yes, I have an Astros podcast blasting off climbingtallishill.com, and you know, we've been breaking it down quite a bit. It's been a bit of a roller coaster ride of a season, so our emotions have been all over the place. Co-host is on the disabled list right now, getting surgery on his finger, so you'll be hearing me mixing in some new co-hosts for the next few weeks, and it'll be a lot of fun getting some new blood on the podcast.
Okay, so I was sharing before the break for the Houston Astros, the strikeouts for the team, they lead the MLB and they keep piling up, and you were talking about Springer and Singleton. I gotta ask you, I mean, you got two young power hitters in the middle of the order. Talk to me about their progression and how they continue. We're past the midpoint of the MLB season.
Well, right now, George Springer, he is a mature hitter beyond his years. You're going to talk about how he leads the American League in strikeouts. Yes, but that's just part of who he is. The thing is, if you're a strikeout guy, you have to offset it. Can you walk? Can you do things with your legs? Can you do things in the field? Can you hit for power? Springer does all of that, and I think he will be able to diminish the strikeouts a little bit with a better two-strike approach. I don't think he needed a two-strike approach very often in the minor leagues. He was able to get away with a lot. That's going to be the challenge for him going into next season. I don't think it's something that can quite be corrected mid-season. That's something you do with your swing, shooting the ball the other way. That's something you work on for months at a time. So I look for him to do that. But besides that, his maturity, Jordan Springer, it's amazing. He's nearing the 20 home run mark. First year in the league, he's already set rookie records for the Astros for home run totals before the All-Star break. Just mammoth power, and the way he uses his power to all fields is something that's very unique in a young hitter. You see other hitters do that maybe later in their career. They learn their strokes to different field, how to take a cutter on the outside corner and take it deep to right center. It's not something you see in a young guy like you've seen in George, and I compare him right now, the way he's hitting home runs. I've used very strong comparisons. I've used Ryan Braun, and now I'm going to use Giancarlo Stanton, because I haven't seen guys hit towering home runs like that other than Giancarlo. We see it in the Home Run Derby. Also, an interesting note of George Springer, he leads the American League in home runs since the date he was called up. So he's not only leading rookies in home runs, he's leading the entire major leagues in home runs, or American League rather, in home runs since he was called up. So you go back to that date, and he's been absolutely tremendous. As for John Singleton, process a little slower. He's a little bit younger guy, but his appearance at the plate is as good as you want. It takes a major league at bat, sees a lot of pitches. Right now, his struggles, the strikeouts are high, yes. That's something we're always going to go back to with the Astros, but it's also what he's doing when he makes contact. Sometimes it's not smart contact. He's swinging maybe at the wrong pitch. Maybe he's pulling the ball when he should be going the other way. He's rolling over on it. The mechanics sometimes are off. But besides that, the quality of at-bats he takes, the pitches he sees, I believe it's going to lead him to have further success once he matures a little bit more.
Okay, we're getting the Astros update with Andy Pondillo right here at Yahoo Sports Radio. I want to back up just a moment, Andy, talking about Springer, just the energy that he brings. But what was your anticipation coming into the 2014 season? Because he has really exceeded expectations. I mean, did you know what he was capable of doing?
I didn't know he could hit for power like he has. I knew that he was going to be a complete player that could hit for maybe a little average. We haven't seen the average yet, but I knew he could get on base. I knew he could run. I knew he could play excellent defense. I knew he could mix the power with that. Now, could you really have expected him from last year to put up a 40-40 campaign and translate that to the majors? That's going to be very difficult to do at the major league level. That's usually reserved for guys like Barry Bonds. So I didn't know if he could keep that type of stature up, because he was coming with a lot of expectation. When you're a young guy on a young team with a lack of veteran leadership, that's going to be hard to do. There's a lot of pressure put on George Springer. I think he's done a phenomenal job. I couldn't have imagined he would have hit for this kind of power at this age. It's almost unheard of to see a guy come to the major leagues and hit like he has.
Okay, talk to me about the second baseman, Jose Altuve. He is just having an incredible season, and what primed to record just the second 200-hit season in Astros history. Is this true?
Yes, Jose Altuve will get to 200 hits very easily at the pace he's going. Already over 120 hits, nearing 130 hits right now. Putting up each row like statistics with the stolen bases, the hits. And, you know, they're talking about the numbers he could put up. You know, I believe it's over 200 hits and 70 stolen bases. I believe he'd be the first guy to do that since 1933. I'd have to check that again. But I mean, he's going into rare territory now with the types of hits and stolen base combination numbers he's putting up. Also, a thing to note is not only the stolen bases, because we've seen guys have big stolen base years but get caught 30 times. He's stolen 28 bases in a row to this point we're recording. So not only is he a great base stealer, but the percentage of it is phenomenal.
Well, and he's just behind what D. Gordon of the Dodgers, correct?
Yes, behind D. Gordon in the major leagues, leads the American League in stolen bases. And the funny thing is, he's a fast guy, but he's not that fast. There's a lot faster guys in Major League Baseball, Michael Bourne, D. Gordon, but he knows how to steal bases, and there's an art to it. I think he spent all offseason trying to figure that out. He had 30 stolen bases last year. This is a huge increase. I don't think anybody saw it coming. And, you know, it just shows you to the young players out there that, you know, if you don't have a big body, you're not the power hitter, you're not the premium prospect, that you can still, learn something in the offseason, you can play winter ball, or you can work for months and months and months and improve your game in some certain way. I think he was determined to improve his stolen base game, and he's come out there and done that.
Well, Jose Altuve, also one of the keys for his success and his consistency, is he's remained so healthy. I mean, what, Andy, he's only missed three games this year. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right around that figure, and a guy that steals a lot of bases, plays middle infield. You know, he, between stealing bases and playing the middle infield, you're going to have a lot of bodies colliding. You're going to have spikes hitting your ankles. You know, also a guy that dives out in front of the plate that's prone to a hit by pitch. He's taken a couple very hard hits this season. So it's very fortunate that he's been able to stay healthy. I think all Astros fans will knock on wood with that, because he's the type of guy that could get, you know, run into, whether it's the stolen bases, whether it's the pitches, whether it's playing second base. There's a lot of chances for little tacky injuries there.
Okay, let's quickly hit on, talk to me about the Mariners. They continue to compete, don't they?
They have surprised me this season. Their pitching is impressive, and we talk about the midseason moves teams are making. Maybe the Mariners made the best move, and it wasn't even a move at all. That was getting Taijuan Walker back from the disabled list, one of the most phenomenal young pitchers I've seen. His stuff is just absolutely raw, and their pitching 1-5 is as good as it gets in the American League. The question I have is their offense. Pitching can carry you so far. Pitching can carry you to 84, 85 wins. Is it enough to get into a wild card position? I would say it's possible right now. I would say it's possible we see three teams from the AL West make postseason play with the two wild cards. So I wouldn't rule the Mariners out completely. I've said over and over and over again that they're going to fall apart in the second half, but I keep eating my words. So I think they're still an 80-win team. I don't think they can surpass the Angels or A's, though.
Okay, well, talk to me about the Angels. And Mike Trout, is he the hands-down MVP this season?
He has to be. If anyone else is the MVP, I don't care if the Angels go to the postseason. Uh-huh. I don't care if they don't win a World Series. You know, they always base it on postseason. I don't care. Mike Trout is the MVP of the American League. If you can name one better player that plays a complete game, mm-hmm, more so than Mike Trout, I would tell you to name him, because I don't know who he is.
Well, I remember us having this conversation way back in April. And it's always a pleasure when you drop by YSR, the Big E Sports Show. I just put it on cruise control because you make my job so easy. Thank you so much for dropping by.
I appreciate it, as always.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR and the Big E Sports Show. Okay, welcome back tonight to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are inside the Quicken Loans Studios. And right now, we're going to take our next conversation. We're packing our bags. We're going to head to Detroit and go around the horn and get the pulse on the Tigers and the team's trajectory as we are now just past the midpoint of the season. It is such a pleasure to have with us this evening Detroit Tigers television voice Mario Impemba. Thank you for the time, Mario. Good evening.
Well, thank you very much. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's nice and hot down here in Houston, so we're certainly enjoying the baseball season. And we knew coming into 2014 that there were very big expectations for the Tigers. They demonstrated that during the first half of the season, that they're the best team in the AL Central. But I'd love for you to break it down for our casual fans, our casual baseball fans tonight, what we have learned about the Tigers so far.
Well, I think what we learned is that they're a very streaky team, and have been at the beginning of the season. They broke out at 27-12, and it looked like they might run away with the Central Division. Then all of a sudden, they went 9-20, and people were starting to wonder, well, what's going on? You know, guys like Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, you know, were having a couple of clunker starts, and all of a sudden, you know, the rest of the pack came back for the Tigers, and that big lead had dissipated, and then they got hot again. So, you know, this is a team that ultimately I think has the best pitching in the Central Division. You know, they have maybe the best player in Miguel Cabrera. They have Victor Martinez, who's doing a terrific job this year offensively as the designated hitter, and a lot of other veteran guys like Torrey Hunter and Ian Kinsler on this team. So I think really top to bottom, once you play a 162-game schedule, the best overall team, the deepest overall team ends up winning. And I think ultimately that's going to be Detroit. But, you know, there are a couple of teams in the Central. Kansas City won't go away. Cleveland is always going to be tough. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the second half.
The television voice for the Detroit Tigers, Mario Impemba, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You're exactly right. The Tigers did get off to a fast start, going 27-12, and then they hit that difficult stretch and really revealed that streaky nature, as you just alluded to. Kind of give us the who, what, why, how they were able to get hot again and get back on track.
Well, for me, it always starts with the starting pitching, and that's why I think ultimately the Tigers win this division, because all of a sudden Verlander put together two or three really good starts. Max Scherzer was the guy that we saw last year that won the Cy Young Award. Anibal Sanchez is very good, and, you know, Rick Porcello has taken the next step, and then he's in the final vote of the All-Star voting, and you know, the Tigers hopeful maybe that maybe an injury or a pitcher that won't make it to the All-Star game will open up a spot for Porcello, because he certainly is deserving. He's won 11 games this year, but you know, the pitching all of a sudden got hot again, and I think that when you have the star-studded rotation that the Tigers do, eventually those losing streaks are probably not going to be as long as maybe some other teams, and I think it's what we're seeing right now with the Tigers.
Okay, we're talking about the Detroit Tigers with Mario Empemba tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. Okay, Detroit's starting pitching, that obviously is the ace in the hole, but when you face difficult stretches, give us a sense of how he was able to respond to that type of adversity.
Well, Justin's one of those guys that's a tinkerer. I mean, he's never really satisfied. He's probably one of the hardest workers in Major League Baseball, and he got off to a slow start. You know, they went back to the drawing board. They checked out some of the starts that he did well in. They noticed maybe a little tweak in his delivery, and all of a sudden they got him to stand up a little bit taller on the mound, and he started getting his velocity back, and his breaking ball had a little bit more command to it. You know, there was never really a question of whether or not he had lost his fastball or lost his curveball or lost his changeup. Mm-hmm. It was a matter of location. And I think that one adjustment that he made gave him better location. And I think that, you know, when a guy is supremely as talented as Justin is, you're always looking for that edge, and I think that's why he just continues to work hard.
You know, Mario, you've seen it all. You've covered professional baseball for over 30 years. I mean, what is your personal belief in terms of when pitchers, when they're going through a bit of a slump, to get them settled down and to bust out of it?
Well, you know, I think one of the things about starting pitching is that it can be, you know, it can fluctuate from year to year. I mean, don't forget, Verlander was the guy that once lost 17 games at the season. You know, it's not easy. You know, as Jim Leland always used to love to say, the other team gives out scholarships too. They're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think sometimes, you know, even guys like Verlander that have done it over and over and over at a very high level, they get into funks. I mean, that's the nature of baseball, and that's why video has become so big, and that's why pitching coaches are so underappreciated, because they will notice little nuances to what a guy is doing on the mound to try and get him back. And I think that Jeff Jones, the Tigers pitching coach, really deserves a lot of credit for what he's been able to do, not only with Verlander, but every pitcher on the staff.
You know, with Verlander, how big of an impact was that offseason hernia surgery?
Well, you know, I don't know, and that's a great question, and it's certainly one that Justin doesn't like to talk about because he doesn't like excuses. But, you know, I think it did mess up his offseason, the way he went about working out and what he does in the offseason to prepare himself for spring training. So maybe he started behind the eight ball a little bit, but he's such a hard worker that nobody really thought he was going to be able to pitch opening day. And he kind of laughed at that notion in December and told everybody in Detroit, I will be ready for opening day if they select me as the opening day starter. He was, they did, and all of a sudden JV is the JV of old physically. So I don't know that that's had a whole lot of impact, but obviously maybe early in the season, it really messed with the way he liked to work in the offseason.
Okay, Mario Empemba is joining us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. I'd love for you to also take time to give us an update on Victor Martinez, chosen to be an All-Star for the fifth time. How is the designated hitter? I mean, he's had such a banner season so far in terms of his health. Can you give us an update?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a bad back. He tweaked his back on a swing in Houston on the last road trip. And, you know, I think the Tigers want to be very cautious because he's such a big, big part of the middle of the lineup, and they don't want to mess this thing up. He came back, hit a home run after missing a couple of games in his very first at-bat, but then the very next day the back started acting up again. It's actually more of his side. So I think that, you know, if they have to not play him over the weekend in Kansas City and get him back after the All-Star break, that would probably be a good thing. But, you know, there's the 4 days built in for off days with this All-Star break. And if he can't play in the All-Star game, he can't play. You know, I think it's more important for him to be ready for the second half. And they'll be very cautious with him.
I certainly agree. That would be in the best interest for the Tigers to perhaps go ahead and rest him. Who has stepped in and really filled that void and provided some power at the plate?
Well, it really is amazing. I mean, J.D. Martinez is a kid that was dispatched by Houston Astros this March. The Tigers were a little bit familiar with him. They knew he had some success in the major league, so they took a flyer on J.D. And signed him to a minor league contract. And all of a sudden, in the month of April, he hits 10 home runs in less than 20 games at AAA.
Wow.
And the Tigers just couldn't ignore him. so they brought him up, and you know, he got some spot starts here and there when they brought him up in the month of May, and all of a sudden in June he really took off, and now in July he continues to do extremely well. I mean, J.D. Martinez is just a great, great story, one of the best stories, I think, in baseball this year. he's finally getting an opportunity to show what he can do on a daily basis, and he's taking advantage of it.
Well, I think one of the great stories in baseball this year, too, is rookie manager Brad Ausmus. He's had to certainly face a number of ups and downs, roller coasters throughout the season, but what's your assessment of the job that he has done so far and what you have seen?
Oh, he's done a great job. And, you know, the thing about Brad is he's such a different guy than Jim Leland. You know, we had the last 8 years of Leland, you know, walking into his office and Jim would be in his underwear laying on the couch. He didn't care what people thought. He would talk baseball. He was just an old school guy. Where Brad is obviously a lot more polished, but, you know, they both get it done in different ways. And the one thing I've noticed about Brad is that regardless of how well the team is doing or how poorly the team is doing, when you walk into his office every day, he's got the same demeanor. He's got the same energy, and I think that's extremely critical because, to me, it starts at the top. And if you see your manager panic, then the players are going to panic or the players are going to lose confidence in him. Brad's a real smart guy. I mean, very rarely do you walk into a manager's office and then hear some of the words that he uses because he's a real educated guy. He's an Ivy League guy. It's a little bit different. It's fun.
Okay, just a few more minutes with Mario Mpemba, the Detroit Tigers television voice. Of course, has a brand new book out. It is titled, If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers. Kind of give us a summary of the book and where our listeners can go and get a copy.
Well, my co-writer, Mike Eisenberg, who is the coordinating producer at Fox Sports Detroit, kind of talked me into doing this book. I really didn't want to. You know, I thought, you know, here in Detroit, the main guy has always been Ernie Harwell. He's, you know, he's the gold standard of broadcasters. And I felt, you know, I really didn't have enough time as a big league broadcaster to be writing a book, but he convinced me the Tigers are doing so well, let's get it done, and we wrote one, and it basically starts from my minor league days, some goofy stories about what happens in the minor leagues, up to when I broadcasted for the Angels, and now currently with the Detroit Tigers. So it's a very easy read. It's not a read where you're going to find dirt about players. It's not a tell-all book. That's not the purpose of it. It's just a book to talk about some of my experiences with big league players. And it's available at all Barnes & Noble stores, barnesandnoble.com, triumphbooks.com, and or Amazon as well. So we hope you pick it up.
Mario, how difficult was it to go through that 2003 season when the team had the record of 119 losses?
You know, it's a great question, and I get it a lot. And I tell people the same thing every single time. It really wasn't difficult for me because, you know, I spent about 10 years broadcasting minor league baseball, and just to get an opportunity to do it in the big leagues, regardless of how good or how bad the team is, when you walk to the ballpark every day and your office is a broadcast booth and you're looking at a big league field, life's pretty good. So, you know, despite the fact that we lost 119 games that year, you know, you still try and maintain your energy. You still try and be as positive as you can. And that's what we did, and that's how we got through it.
Is there a particular memory that stands out the most, your time with the Tigers?
Boy, there are quite a few because, in my opinion, really since 2006, this has been the glory days of Tigers baseball. I mean, they've been to the playoffs four times. They've been to the World Series a couple of times. But the Maglio-Ordonez home run off Houston Street to put the Tigers in the World Series, the walk-off home run in 2006, is probably at the top of that list. But, you know, right behind are the Justin Verlander no-hitters, the Armando Galarraga almost perfect game, which should have been a perfect game. There have been a lot, but those probably stand at the top.
You know, I certainly enjoyed reading about, in terms of your broadcasting journey, going from the minor leagues and that experience. Would you mind sharing? We have a couple more minutes. Would you mind sharing that tonight with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I started back in 1987. You know, I just graduated from Michigan State University, and there was an opening in Peoria, Illinois, to do minor league baseball for the Cubs Class A affiliate, and so that's what I did. I mean, I started on that track. I either wanted to broadcast big league baseball or be an NBA announcer, and baseball presented itself first. So I spent about 10 years in the minors, you know, just trying to find that first big league opportunity, and it finally happened in 1995 with the Angels, and I've been in the big league since. So, but I wouldn't trade it. You know, there were some really tough times. I didn't make any money. The bus rides, the pulling the tarp, the answering the phones, the selling tickets, the selling advertising. None of that stuff is really easy, but I wouldn't trade a minute of it because I made some great friends. I learned the game of baseball. I learned how to broadcast the game of baseball, and it really was a tremendous experience for me.
Okay, as we get ready to close out our interview with Mario Mpemba, the television voice of the Detroit Tigers, I definitely want to get your pulse on, is this team, 2014, are the Detroit Tigers built to win it all this season?
I think so. I think they do need to make some adjustments to the bullpen. They need a few more arms. Joe Nathan has come around now as the closer. Jabba Chamberlain's been really good. Albuquerque's been really good. But they need a few more arms in the bullpen to get them through the stretch run and to get them past Oakland and some other teams once we get to the postseason. But definitely. They've got, you know, two of the greatest hitters in the game right now in the middle of their lineup. They've got a great rotation. They've got some great veteran presence, some good young talent. So it's a really well-built team, and I think it does have a chance to go all the way.
Okay, the Detroit Tigers television voice Mario Mpemba has been joining us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Congratulations on all your success. And, of course, the title of the book is If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers, Stories from the Detroit Tigers Dugout, Locker Room, and Press Box. It was an honor. Thank you so much, Mario.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back to Yahoo Sports Radio on this Friday night. And there is a new book out this week that claims Major League Baseball allowed Alex Rodriguez to use banned substance before his 2007 MVP season. It is an absolutely fascinating read that co-authors Tim Elfrink and Newsday investigative reporter Gus Garcia Roberts just released. It is titled Bloodsport, Alex Rodriguez, Biogenesis, and the Quest to end baseball's steroid era. Break it down. It's good to have you with us tonight, Gus.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, let me tell you, there is a number of storylines that I want us to hit on tonight, but perhaps the most shocking for me is that Alex Rodriguez received permission from Major League Baseball to use testosterone during the 2007 MVP season. How can this be? I mean, how could that have been allowed? I thought they were trying to end the steroid use in baseball.
Yeah, it was pretty stunning to Tim and I as well. The way that we found out about that was when Rodriguez appealed his suspension last year. Major League Baseball entered into evidence documents pertaining to what they call therapeutic use exemptions, and this is a product of an agreement between the league and the union where if a player can prove that they have the medical need for a banned substance, they're allowed to use it for 1 year. So in 2007, Rodriguez applied for and was granted permission to use testosterone. 2007 turned out to be one of his strongest years of his career. He won the MVP award, and after that he signed a $275 million contract extension. Then the next season, Rodriguez applied for two other exemptions, and he was allowed to, he was granted one, which was Clomid, which is a female fertility drug, but sometimes prescribed to men in order to boost testosterone. So you have a picture of a guy who is receiving these, what are considered performance-enhancing drugs that very few other players in the league are allowed to use.
Gus Garcia Roberts is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, the title of the new book that he has co-authored is titled Bloodsport, Alex Rodriguez, Biogenesis, and the Quest to End Baseball Steroid Era. And when you go through the book, it certainly also reveals just kind of what a bizarre figure A-Rod is. Can you cite some examples and some of the strange details that you were able to share within this book?
I would love to. Those are most detailed illustration of A-Rod's behavior and his relationship with Anthony Bosch came from in Bosch's of the chief of Biogenesis, the Miami clinic, which provided steroids to Rodriguez and more than a dozen other baseball players. But this description of their relationship actually came from Bosch himself. Bosch flipped on Rodriguez and testified during Rodriguez's appeal against A-Rod. And though that testimony was confidential, but a source gave us a very detailed account. And so Bosch describes visiting Rodriguez in A-Rod's various apartments in Manhattan. He would set A-Rod up with an IV of banned substances and also an oxygen mask, because Bosch believed that 100% oxygen helps make doping more effective. So Rodriguez believed so firmly in Bosch's science that he actually installed a hyperbaric chamber in his West Village apartment so that he could dope with 100% oxygen. Bosch describes not only going to that Bank Street apartment, but going to an apartment overlooking the Hudson River, in which before Bosch went in, he was told by Rodriguez's cousin, Yuri Sukard, who's sort of Rodriguez's steroid handler, to take his shoes off. And when he took his shoes off, he learned why. Everything in the apartment was all white. And so once in the apartment, Bosch again gave Rodriguez banned substances. So his testimony was rife with these sort of meetings, doping him in the lobby of a building where Denzel Washington and Sting live, meeting in a Starbucks bathroom, and Bosch selling Rodriguez drugs, meeting Rodriguez in Detroit during A-Rod's worst playoff performance in 2012, where A-Rod was so desperate for an edge that he had Bosch fly up there and give him HGH and peptides, although it didn't help because A-Rod still remained benched by then manager Joe Girardi, and when he did pinch it, he still couldn't hit a lick. But it was pretty astounding that A-Rod, this guy who has enormous talent, would appear to feel so insecure and desperate for an edge that he would recruit Bosch, this bogus, unlicensed biochemist from Miami, to basically follow him around and be his steroid butler.
Well, and the other thing too, Gus, you have to share with our listeners tonight, there's so many crazy stories, but the fact that Tony Bosch, he lost, Alex Rodriguez's vial on the dance floor?
That's actually my favorite one, which is that Anthony Bosch was supposed to meet Rodriguez at his Star Island mansion, which is a very chic mansion, a very chic island near Miami. But instead, they met at the Fontainebleau Hotel because Rodriguez had a social engagement. So they met at the Fontainebleau Hotel, the Liv nightclub inside of it, and they went to a stall where Bosch drew Rodriguez's blood. He liked to test it periodically. Drew his blood, put it in a vial in his pocket, and then this really elucidates Bosch more than Rodriguez. He then decided to go hit the dance floor, and he lost the vial on the dance floor, looked for it for a while, finally found it. But when Bosch told the story in his testimony, A-Rod's attorney asked him pointedly, were you using cocaine this night? And Bosch's reply was, I plead the fifth.
We definitely want to invite you back because we also want to talk about how many of the Biogenesis players, how they certainly benefited financially in those contracts, too. So, again, Gus, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
It was fun. Thanks.
That, of course, was Newsday investigative reporter Gus Garcia-Roberts. We want to thank all of our guests, our lineup tonight, Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment, Andy Pondillo right here from YSR, Gary Peterson, Mario Impemba, the TV voice for the Detroit Tigers, and our good friend Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4 in Oklahoma City. Reminding all of you to don't drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show.
Get organized and save big money with Dakota Closets at Menards. Dakota Closets can be installed in any room, from home offices and laundry rooms to walk-in or reach-in closets. Use the You Create Closet Planner, available in-store or online, to design a Dakota closet system that maximizes your space and matches your style. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.